antibiotic that can kill a deadly superbug. While we've been on air, police have said they're not treating a car crash at the gates of Downing Street as being terror-related. A man has been arrested. Figures from the Office for National Statistics have shown that net migration reached a record high in 2022 at more than 600,000. The new energy price cap for England, Scotland and Wales has been announced and is £400 lower than the previous level. The government is considering plans to vaccinate poultry and wild birds against avian flu. A bill which would ban live animal exports and take further action to tackle puppy smuggling has been dropped by the government, amid fears it could be forced into a vote on hunting. BBC News.
And the news was read by Caroline Nichols. It's a Fear Cop next, as former Humberside sergeant and stand-up comic Alfie Moore provides the comedy. Tonight, no one likes a grass, except, that is, the police. They love a good informant. And I'm here to inform you that the comedy just keeps rolling on in next week.
On BBC Radio 4.
Californian rapper Dr. Dre owns 7 thoroughbred racehorses. His most successful horse to date is a filly named Straight Outta Kempton.
A new series of The Panel Game built on truth and lies.
Laurie Singer these days suffers from a condition called dancer's ankle. So ironically, having been in Footloose, she now has a loose foot.
With host David Mitchell and guests including Kerry Godleman, Alan Davis and Phil Wang.
Tea has such an earthy flavour that astronauts have a phobia of it, which is why astronauts say T-minus during the countdown.
The Unbelievable Truth on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds. The new 6:30 comedy for Monday nights.
And the comedy continues now on Radio 4 with another chance to hear the stand-up copper Alfie Moore with a real-life police case. And this week he turns his attention to the complicated world of police informants.
Whoop, whoop, that's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop, that's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop, that's the sound of the police.
Hello, my name is Alfie Moore and welcome to It's a Fair Cop. The show where you, the audience, are sworn in to face the same policing dilemmas that I faced in today's real case. As police officers, your primary responsibilities will be to prevent and detect crime and to keep the Queen's peace. Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers. Well, what I actually said was, leave it, Peter, it's not worth it. Which leads me to this week's topic. What have Jesus Christ, gangster John Dillinger and Osama bin Laden got in common? They were all betrayed by an informant. A stool pigeon, snitch, snout, squealer, weasel, a narc. No one likes a grass. Except the police. We love them. This week's show is about informants who are one of the most cost-effective ways to prevent and detect crime. We in policing circles call them CHIS, which stands for Covert Human Intelligence Source. It may surprise you to know that they are used in almost every area of policing. We have thousands of registered informants. The UK spend about £5 million a year on them. London's Metropolitan Police spend a big chunk of it, about £2 million. Still, the London informants have much bigger overheads than those living in the north. I won't hear a word said against the Met Police. They're very under-resourced. The Met are so busy now that they ask you to tamper with your own evidence. Although excellent value for money, informants do tend to throw up some ethical challenges, and the management of risk in covert law enforcement is off the scale, as we may be about to discover in today's real case. But first, we asked our studio audience, have you ever reported someone for doing something wrong? So Peter tells us, I can't remember doing so. This may actually be rather worrying as I spent 3 years doing internal audits. Badly, by the sounds of it. This one's anonymous. Have you ever reported somebody for doing something wrong? I once reported a work colleague for vandalising a bus by painting dangerous lies on it. What happened? I was expelled from the cabinet and had my whip removed. This question was, has anyone ever snitched on you? What does Lee tell us? At school, I had done graffiti everywhere with the initials JB, which aren't mine. The school then called at assembly up the two boys with these initials and then made them stand there until one confessed. I totally got away with it. They were great. Give yourself a round of applause. In the police, even we are encouraged to inform on each other at work. Every force has its own internal anonymously report a colleague protocol. Ours in the Humberside Police is called the Bad Apple Scheme. More colleagues than ever are using this scheme, but mainly those who've watched too much Line of Duty and are convinced that one of the cleaners is H. I've seen the reports informing on fellow officers, and most of them are surprisingly trivial. Someone's been using my mug. He's on my side of the desk. Alfie's left the prisoner in the cells and gone off on a week's holiday. I actually did that, not deliberately. I completely forgot about that. I mean, he was all right. Somebody found him. I got a call from a very angry DI after my plane had landed in Tenerife. I even answered the phone, hola, which probably didn't help. Time to swear you all in as coppers for the show. Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I do solemnly swear and affirm to be a fair cop. You're all cops now, so you can only communicate using moody looks and sarcasm. Police work can be varied, and today's real case is set during my time in the DPT, the Divisional Proactive Team. This is an intelligence-led plainclothes unit that deals with things like warrants and informants. In the DPT, your uniform consists of jeans and trainers, and you swan about feeling more important than you really are. I knew one kid got a bit carried away. He bought himself a James Bond-style shoulder holster. We weren't issued with guns. He just kept his pocket notebook in it. This department is a Scunthorpe version of the Sweeney. Picture Jack Regan wearing a flat cap and saying, "Get in, van lad, that's nicked." We even use covert cars to blend in, which in Scunthorpe meant an untaxed, misfiring Cavalier with one headlight. If a big job comes in, you might get stuck at work, but the good news is that the regulations state you'd be paid overtime, providing you submit a Humberside Police Form 201 before going off duty. Sometimes you'd forget your stab vest, your police radio, where you'd left an injured colleague. But no one ever forgets to submit a 201, ever. Our real case begins on a typical Wednesday afternoon at Scunthorpe Police Station. I'm at the vending machine with a murky grey cappuccino in my hand, wondering what to use as a stirrer. Fortunately, a young, fresh-faced, uniformed probationer approaches, and I think, oh, he'll have a pen. He was young and keen, just like I was when I was in uniform 2 weeks earlier. He explains that he's just finished interviewing a prisoner called Mark, who's in for driving offences. Minor stuff, an illegal tyre, no tax or MOT, but they couldn't confirm his identity at the roadside, so it looked a bit dodgy. They brought him in. Once at the police station, Mark has expressed an interest in becoming a police informant, a chiz. I go see Mark in the interview room. He's a scrawny, spotty, slightly ferrety 20-year-old that quite annoyingly inserts the word like in every sentence. I can't decide if it's a verbal tick or just what young people talk like. Audience cops, we've got Mark in custody. He's expressed an interest in being an informant. What should I ask him? Over to you. What should we ask him? Hello, what's your name?
Paul.
Paul, hello, Paul. What's your thinking, Paul?
I think you're asking him what information he's got that he thinks you think would be valuable.
Good. Good question. What information has he got? Has anybody got a different question to Paul? Hello, sir, what's your name?
Robert.
Robert, okay. You want to ask him...
why?
Why? That's a very good question, Robert. Of course, yes, as Paul said, what is an important thing we want to know, but even more important is what is his motivation? Mark is unemployed and he said he needs some money. He's a convicted shoplifter and offers to provide the identity of other local shoplifters in exchange for payment. Often a chiz's real motivation is to take out the competition. Scunthorpe's got a limited number of retail outlets, and the last thing a shoplifter wants to see is another shoplifter. Thing is, I already know the identity of all the local shoplifters. The shops know the identity of the local shoplifters. We'll have to do better than that, Mark. We're not made of money. In fact, we're skint. Do you know why we taser people at night? The electricity's cheaper. Then he adds that he knows where the stolen property is going, the fence. For those that don't know, a fence is a sort of a middleman, buys dodgy stuff and then sells it on. In eBay terms, unlikely to have a 90% positive feedback. Mark tells me he knows where there's like a house full of stolen gear. Interesting. Audience cops, should I register him as a chiz? Who says yes? Let's get me registered. Hello, madam.
Hello.
What's your name?
Sue.
Sue, you think we should register Mark as a chiz? Can I ask for your thinking?
Well, I was going to ask, are you allowed to ask him for that information and then decide whether it's true or not and then decide whether you can register him or not?
You want to bring on some sort of trial?
Yeah. Is that allowed?
A temporary informant.
Yeah. On trial, probationary informant.
That's good thinking. We wouldn't do that, but it's...
Well, perhaps you should.
It's good thinking, but we can talk to him. So anybody think no? Anybody think no? I've got a bad feeling about this. I'm not going to register him. Gentleman with the specs, sir, what's your name?
Darren.
Darren, you don't like the sound of this guy?
No.
You don't like him?
No. He's a spotty teenager.
Spotty teenager. You like your informants to be a bit more respectable?
Indeed. If you know all the shoplifters anyway, you'll know where all the gear is already, so...
OK.
It's a pointless exercise.
All right, hold that thought. In any case, I can't register Mark as a chiz on the spot. There is an application process. You're right, sir. It's starting to sound a bit like a job interview now, isn't it? Where do you see yourself in 5 years with a new identity under the witness protection scheme? I send the application up to the DI and he agrees to register Mark as a chiss. We're off. Audience cops, who would consider reducing Mark the Narc's minor driving charges, you know, as a token of good faith? Who says, no, I'm not going to write his driving charges off. I don't agree with that. Hello, sir.
Hello there.
What's your name?
My name's Phil.
Phil, OK, Phil, talk to me. What do you think?
I think that you should keep the charges there and keep them in hand so that you can screw him.
I agree with you. The answer is certainly not. Ethics aside, we are now entering a world of payment by results. Of course, I do take his information about the stolen gear, feed it into our intelligence system, but the address is actually not known to us, although Mark the Narc insists it's the right place and swears it's like an Aladdin's cave, like. Audience cops, who says let's do something about that? He's given us an address. Let's go and get a search warrant and turn the place over. What's your name, please?
Peter.
Peter, can I ask you for your rationale there, Peter?
If you find something, that's good. You might have cleared some crimes. If you don't find anything, then you know it's a waste of time. So move on to the next guy who's going to give you some information.
OK, so you're going to go over this, call this a hot lead. Do you know who authorises search warrants?
Someone above me. It would be a court.
A court, exactly. It's a magistrate. And I'm afraid there's absolutely no chance that a magistrate is going to sign a search warrant on the grounds of uncorroborated information from our unidentified, untested source. It's not going to happen. Now, I've signed Mark up as a chiz. One of my responsibilities is to ensure that he remains an unidentified source. I should have changed his name for this show, really. My first opportunity to use Mark comes up a couple of weeks later. We are under pressure to do something about an ongoing series of shed burglaries in Scunthorpe. Audience cop, should I actively task Mark with finding out what is the word on the street who might be responsible for these shed burglaries? Should I task him? What do you think? Hello, what's your name?
My name's Sue.
Hello, Sue. You're a yes. Why? Yeah.
Why not? What? If he's prepared to give you that information and help you out, why not? What you got to lose?
Well, one thing we may have to lose is, are we putting him at more risk? Now, we're no longer passively receiving intelligence from him. We're actually proactively sending him out there to go sniffing around. I have got a duty of care over Mark. Who feels different to Sue and who thinks it's a bit too risky at this early stage to task him? Hello, madam, what's your name?
Hello, my name's Karen.
Karen, you're sort of pulling away early. Well, you're not prepared to task him?
He's an unknown. I don't think you should be tasking him to do anything.
Okay,
yet.
What about our primary responsibilities? We talked about at the top, and that is to prevent crime. And this is a way we can...
I think your primary responsibility is to make sure he doesn't get hurt.
Okay, that's interesting. You think, although our primary responsibility is to prevent and detect crime, you put his safeguarding before crime detection in this case?
I put his safeguarding above someone nicking out of a shed, yeah.
Nicking out of a shed, okay. So, we've got opposing views. The answer is I do task him, although I have a duty of care to Mark, quite rightly, which involves a continuous risk assessment. And once he starts digging around for info, yes, the risk does increase exponentially. After a few days, he provides useful intelligence about the shed burglaries, which does help to progress our police inquiries. As a reward, the DI, my controller, authorises a payment of... How much do you think for clearing up some shed burglaries? What would that payment be to him, do you think? Have a guess. How many? 100. 100? OK. I think you're quoting London prices. 40 quid. It was 40 quid. The problem is that Mark is a Class A drug user. Anyone see any risk in handing the cash over? How much is a wrap of coke? You didn't fall for that trick question, did you? Any other options then beside cash? Any other options you can think of?
Sandwich.
A sandwich? A 40 quid sandwich? What's in that? Anything else? Somebody said vouchers. Yeah, I suppose we could give him some John Lewis vouchers. He'd be the smartest informant in Scunthorpe, wouldn't he? What I do is I give him 20 quid and I will give him the rest the next time I see him. Really good quality informants can be given a lifestyle allowance, an ongoing weekly payment into the bank account like a normal wage. It doesn't say from the police on the standing order, obviously. I get contact from Mark and he's now started hanging about in a pub known to be frequented by a criminal gang in order to pick up intelligence, and they've started to befriend him. Audience cops, is our informant vulnerable? What do you think? We've got one person at the front thought he was vulnerable 5 minutes ago. Now a lot more people think he's vulnerable. I make a slight adjustment. Up until now, I've been meeting Mark the Narc at the police station. It didn't look odd, really. Petty criminals are always in and out of police stations. But now I decide it's wise to start meeting him out of town at McDonald's at the motorway services. On my way to the meet, I'm suddenly aware of blue lights flashing in my mirror. I'll let you into a secret. Even coppers feel apprehensive when they're followed by the police. We do. I get pulled over by a police traffic officer. I should say at this point, all police departments dislike each other equally. I don't like traffic cops. They're always the smartest looking, best dressed officers with the shiny shoes. They're sometimes called black rats. And that's because they often lurk in the shadows. They're very cunning and they eat their own young. They also have the worst banter in the force. After looking my cavalier up and down, the traffic officer screws up his face and stares, "Built this car yourself, did we, sir?" In response, I reach into my jeans, I pull out my police badge, and out of the corner of my mouth, I whisper, "Back off, ratty." I'm on a job. When I arrive at McDonald's and sit opposite Mark, he starts looking round a bit shiftily. After a short while, Mark slides a carrier bag towards me under the table. "What's in that?" I ask. He tells me it's like a stolen laptop. I ask him to clarify if it's like a stolen laptop or it is a stolen laptop. He goes on to explain that the criminal gang has given it him to sell for them. He thinks it's some kind of initiation. The laptop has been stolen from a local college and the gang want him to get £50 for it. Audience cops, what are you going to do? Hello, what's your name?
Diane.
Diane, what's your thinking?
I would say initially you should go ahead and purchase the laptop.
Purchase a laptop?
Yes, you need to establish some sort of trust between Mark and the gang. So then he needs some sort of credibility.
Okay, you think we should do it? Okay, interesting. Yeah. Okay. Here's a question for you, though. If I take that laptop, am I handling stolen property?
You're a cop.
A lot of people in the room think I might be. I'm not handling stolen property. Well, if I wrap it up and give it my wife for a birthday. Is there anybody who's not going to take the laptop who says, lady here, if you...
He might have just nicked the laptop.
Oh, he might have nicked the laptop himself.
And if you gave him 50 quid for it, he was going to put it in his back pocket.
Oh, he might have nicked the laptop himself. Anybody else thinking that? Yes. Yeah, OK, well, it's complex, isn't it? What I'm thinking is, if I don't give him the money, he might get a good hiding off the rest of the gang. It's a very difficult call, and so I assess the risk to my own career, and I pass it on to... I pass the decision on to my controller, who authorises me to give him the £50 for the laptop. I also pay for his Big Mac. I don't go large. I mean, he's not a supergrass. The following week, things escalate. When I meet Martin Ark, he tells me that the gang are now planning a series of ram raids. Now it's starting to feel a bit more serious. We start with a young man committing minor driving offences. Now I've been tasking him, coaching him, buying stolen laptops from him, and now he's on the fringe of a criminal gang planning ram raids. Is this still ethical policing? So, two choices, audience cops. Let it run or end it now. Who says, time to call it a day, time to pull Mark out now? Hello, sir, what's you thinking?
It's just too dangerous.
Too dangerous. At what point did it reach that? What was the thing that tipped it for you?
The personal safety of the informant.
Personal safety of the informant, okay, thank you. Who says the opposite? Who says, this is just getting interesting. Time to go for it. Where are the gophers? Where's the Jack Regans? That's what he would do. Hello, sir. You're going for it. What's your name?
David.
David, you think full steam ahead. Can I ask for your rationale?
If you pull out, the chances are he's going to go through with it anyway because he's got nowhere else to go.
Right. So we may as well use him while we can. So you like to sail close to the wind. You're a gambler, David?
Not every day.
Thank you, David. So what if there's a third choice? Anyone want to arrest a gang now for conspiracy before the ram raids? Would anybody like to go down that route? Oh, this gentleman is here.
Well, he's given you enough information that you should be able to now go forward normal policing by surveillance.
The problem is, the only evidence I have against him at this point would come from Mark, which would mean using him as a witness at court. Would the police put an informant in the stand? The answer is no. We would want to build a case without using his evidence. For us to put an informant in the stand would have to be a very serious offence, maybe an issue of national security. There are some witness protection options at our disposal. These are called special measures. I can remember a high-profile Crown Court trial. This is absolutely true. There were proper gangsters in the dock. The main prosecution evidence was from undercover police officers, and the special measures were screens up to protect their identity. They called the first witness Detective A. The tension built, you could hear a pin drop. And then the door opened, the silhouette of Detective A appeared behind the screen. He had to walk a few paces to the witness box, and the silhouette of Detective A began to move behind the screen. And then the court started to giggle, and Detective A looked and saw the screens had been set too low and his head was sticking out above the top. Then you start to do the pretending to walk down the stairs walk. So things are hotting up for my informant, but I'm still happy that we're just on the right side of ethical policing. Then the following week, I get a panicky call from Mark the Nork asking for a meet. Not in the usual venue. He wants to meet at an out-of-the-way rural location. He's got something very important to tell me. Audience cops, should I go alone? Who says go, by the way? Who says no, we're going for this? Could be good for your career, it could be a big job, or it could also be a trap. I mean, I might get bungled into the back of a van and kidnapped. The organisation would be really panicking. They'd be thinking, time and a half the first 4 hours and then double time as I move into arrest day. The bosses would be sent my severed ear, accompanied by a ransom note from the kidnappers and a Form 201 signed by me. I don't go alone. It's too risky on many levels. I go to the CID office and I find an ageing detective sat in the corner. He's always there. His nickname was Station Cat because he never went out. He agrees to come with me on the meet as long as he can stay in the Cavalier watching reruns of Vera on his iPad. When we arrive, it's a lay-by in the middle of nowhere, and Mark is already there waiting for us, sat in a transit van. He seems very agitated. The gang are planning a ram raid tonight. Not only that, but he's going to be involved. Involved? What's his involvement? He's just like the driver, like. Just? Being the driver in a ram raid is generally considered quite a central... He's not been given the location of the ram raid. He's waiting for a text, but it's going to happen in a few hours. So just to be clear, we are now looking at the serious offence of conspiracy to commit aggravated burglary. OK, audience cops, time to really earn our money now. Should I let him continue? Is there anybody still in the game? Have we got anybody in the room still in play? We have, here. What's your name, please?
Sasha.
Nearly everybody else in the room is out now, but you're still in the game. Can I ask you what you're thinking is?
Well, if you don't catch them in the act, then you've still only got evidence from him, so you have to catch them doing it.
Ethical arguments aside, do you think that you have the legal authority to give him permission to go ahead and commit this crime, which he will be doing? Are you above the law?
I don't know now.
All right, so we'll just finish off with some more of your audience questions, and I'll tell you what I did. So, what's Kerry got to tell us? Have you ever reported someone for doing something wrong? I reported some fly tipping close to the village where I live. There was another lady there at the time who was looking very sheepish as I pulled up, and she was trying to fit 6 feet metal scaffold poles in her Fiesta, in her words, for her runner beans. We've got one from Ness. Have you ever reported someone for doing something wrong? Taking my kids to school, a guy tried to speed past me in a narrow lane. When he could not get past, he spat at my window. When I got home, I wiped his spit off with tissue and took it to the local police. 6 months later, I was contacted for a statement as they'd got him in court for other offences. Wow, well done. Time to conclude tonight's real case. Our registered informant, Mark, has been passing information about a criminal gang who now want him to be involved in a ram raid planned to take place in a few hours. Should I let him continue? I make my decision, and it is that this has gone far enough. Mark is frightened, vulnerable, and clearly in over his head. There's no way is he going to have any further involvement. And I suddenly remembered something. I asked him, what happened about those traffic offences you originally arrested for? He says, I got 3 points, like. How many points do you have now in total? 12, like. Did you drive that van here? Yeah. Right then, Mark, I think I've got a way out of this. I am arresting you for driving while disqualified. You're coming with me. I've never seen anyone look so relieved. We recovered the van, which meant the ram raid didn't go ahead. And although we couldn't get the gang on this occasion, we had the intel to watch them more closely and arrested them on another job. Importantly, I've upheld my duty of care to Mark. I've taken him out of the equation. He simply told everyone he'd been arrested for disqualified driving, which he had. We didn't process him for the disqualified driving. The paperwork sort of got lost. Not all of it. I still put my 201 in. Mark told me I've given it a lot of thought, like, and I'm not going to be an informant anymore. It makes me feel dirty and dishonest and... and so I'm going back to shoplifting. That's all from this week's It's a Fair Cop. Take care. Goodbye. It's a Fair Cop was written and presented by me, Alfie Moore. The script editor was Will Ing and the producer was Richard Morris. It was a BBC Studios production.
And Alfie will be back with a brand new series of It's a Fair Cop next year. And tomorrow's 6:30 comedy is a special edition of the news quiz recorded on stage at the Hay Festival. After the news today, Oliver makes a surprising offer in the Arches.
I'm Helena Bonham Carter, and this is History's Secret Heroes.
They knew they were going to be caught, and actually that was sort of part of the plan.
A series of rarely heard tales about World War II's best kept secrets.
We pretended that we were the real troops, so that the real troops could do their thing, because the Germans would think we were them.
These are 10 true stories of unsung heroes, acts of resistance, deception, and courage.
There was just this piece of her she could never talk about, which was being a spy.
History's Secret Heroes begins next Wednesday morning at 11:30 on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
BBC News at 7 o'clock. Scientists in Canada and the US have used artificial intelligence to discover a new antibiotic that can kill a deadly species of superbug. The team used AI to whittle down thousands of potential drugs that could be used against the bug called Acinetobacter baumannii. Dr. Jonathan Stokes from McMaster University says AI is revolutionising drug discovery.
AI enhances the rate, and in a perfect world, decreases the cost with which we can discover these new structural and functional classes of antibiotics that we desperately need. It's not a panacea. It's not going to solve all of our problems, but it's a remarkably powerful and dynamic tool.
Police say they're not treating an incident outside Downing Street earlier as terrorism. A car hit the security barriers at the end of the street. No one was injured. A man was arrested on suspicion of criminal damage and dangerous driving. The UK